The following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now it's True Wealth, presented by Little John Financial Services. Here is David Littlejohn with True Wealth on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, it is that time of the week. Welcome to the True Wealth Radio Show. I am your host, Dave Littlejohn. In studio with me,
Matt Dixon.
On this, the greatest Tuesday you've had all week.
It feels good to be in the studio, doesn't it?
It does. I don't know why it feels like it's been a really long time, too. It's weird.
It feels like it's been a minute.
It's just, well, I guess because last week was the 4th of July. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's actually been, the way things work at the station and so forth. So 4th of July, we were celebrating America's birthday. So happy birthday, belated America. Mm-hmm. Good job. And
isn't today Independence Day? I mean, it's Prime Day, right? Like, we have independence from the 40% markups from our retailers. So
I don't know that it's even that good, right? Prime Day is a fun one, I suppose. If you're an Amazon junkie, you can separate yourself from some more of your hard-earned capital.
Mm-hmm. If you have an Amazon card, you get 6% back today instead of just 5.
Oh, I see.
Oh man, so those Amazon points are going to start racking up.
Oh, it's could be a game changer, right?
Wouldn't it be interesting to know how much money is spent on average on Prime Day? That would be wild.
Out there, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure. There have been some things that have maybe crossed the list that were at meaningful discounts that have been observed, maybe even captured today. So
you got your eye on a few things?
I have my eye on a few things.
Okay.
Yes. So they're kind of silly things, right? Yeah. Like, here's some insight into how nerdy I am. I have in the limited time that I can develop hobbies, and I say that because I have, you know, a whole family of, so I have three daughters. In fact, today I do have a special. I'm going to do this on air, and hopefully she will hear this. But to my littlest little John, right, to Miss Lauren, happy birthday.
Oh, boy.
I know. So today is the actual birthday, too, not belated or anything else.
Yeah.
So,
how happy old birthday. Is Lauren today?
Lauren is very big girl, 8 years old.
Ooh.
Yes, which actually is pretty true because there seems to be this transition period where she's capable of a lot more logic and reason than she was a couple years ago.
Yeah.
She's still that same zany, goofy, and like
high
really
energy.
Fiery kid.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, she's got just tons of personality and she's just go, go, go. But I can also stop now and have like a conversation like, well, I want this thing, right? And she wouldn't ask for this, but something crazy like, you know, well, why can't I go to the moon, Dad? And now if I explain it to her, it's not like, well, you just can't, right? Now it's a, well, honey, you're going to have to go to astronaut school first. And that means you're going to have to, you know, find a channel to do that. And she go, that does sound harder. So
the logic is really starting to set in. Huh?
It's fun. It's so cool watching kids grow up and learn. And when they start, well, now she'll push back on things and she has reasons.
Mm.
Right. And that's kind of exciting, too. But anyway, if you're listening, Lauren, happy birthday. I hope it continues to be an amazing day for you. And I couldn't be more proud of you. You are the bestest. Anyway, for so there was our you know, get off the rails or off track thing, but what was the original question?
I don't even know.
We're talking about America's birthday, then we're talking about Lord, and then we're talking about watching
Prime Day.
The kiddos.
Prime Day.
I guess Prime Day was in there too. My hobby.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
There we go. You're bringing it full circle now, David.
I may get a small, like a mini PC.
Oh,
right?
like the really tiny ones
that
are like the size of your phone.
Yeah, like you know, like a couple decks of cards or something. They're mm-hmm. really little, low power draw. Because I like home automation.
Okay.
And so home automation to me is not just like, you know, we won't say it on radio because then, like, if you have one in your house and you're listening, but that Amazon device that we don't say her name, if you say that, and then, like, turn the lights off or something like that, okay, that can happen in our home, or, hey, play music or whatever. What I want to have happen is all the stuff to happen without having to do anything.
Wow, you're really going, you're, like, super automation mode.
So, nerd level.
Like when you walk in the room, the lights turn on type stuff? Or
not just that the lights turn on.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you walk in the room at certain times, the lights turn on at different intensities.
Oh, okay.
Or like I put in under cabinet lighting in our kitchen, and it's smart LED that can change color. Mm-hmm. And it's color tuned so that it's different during daylight than at night.
Oh,
and
like
so
a softer
it would
light.
Know,
yeah.
Well, it's actually a different. I mean, that's the concept, right?
Right.
Softer. So it's warmer, right? So daylight, you have just a different color temperature than at night.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a nighttime color temperature and a daytime color temperature. And they look different whether or not they're interacting with sunlight. Because the warm light looks yellowy mm-hmm. when the sun's out. But when the sun goes down, the white light looks kind of harsh, and so you make it a little bit more yellow, and it just it's a different tone. It's easier on the eyes. I want to put presence detection in so it knows not only if a person is in there and if they're holding still, like if you're reading a book or something, it still knows you're there.
Hmm.
But this is all clever stuff, right? Think about, okay, I'll draw this back to True Wealth. You ready for this?
Yes.
Here's the connection. I want to get this computer. I don't have to, but I want to because it makes all the different brands of devices talk to each other through a single hub. So you don't have to have just one type. Like, you know, you don't get all ABC brand. You can get ABC and XYZ and LSMFT, whatever. It's all the different brands can talk through this hub. And then I can do things like the house will know if nobody's in it.
So it will actually shut the lights off for you without you having
off,
to tell
and
it.
And it will change the temperature setting on the HVAC. It can like stop the recirc pump on the hot water heater.
How much is this device, if you don't mind me asking? Ballpark
so
it for me.
The
computer.
Hub?
Yeah, the hub.
$100?
Do you think that could pay for itself?
Yes.
In just the electricity savings?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely would pay for itself. Over probably about 12 to 24 months, it'll pay for itself in doing in this energy savings. But where it will, it's the lifestyle stuff that when you don't even know what's happening, it's just mm-hmm. automatic. That's just kind of cool.
Right,
like,
because
oh,
it frees
room,
up your mind
the
to
lights
work.
Lights stayed on for 3 or 4 minutes, and then they just shut off if you're not there. But it's not motion sensing, right? Because
mm-hmm.
you could sit still and the motion sensor wouldn't know you were there. Presence detection is different. All right, so there's nerdy stuff, right?
Yeah.
Talk about, and does it make sense if you factor my time into designing it? No. No, it does not. But it's a thing I like
That's
doing.
That's a convenience.
Right?
That's a big convenience.
Well, like, here's a funny thing. So we have a swimming pool.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we have a swimming pool in Oregon. It came with the house. There's my excuse. I love the swimming pool. I don't mind vacuuming the pool.
Okay.
A lot of people are like, why don't you just get a service? Like, you have a yard service and stuff. Why don't you just have somebody manage the pool for you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's therapeutic for me.
You
I
like
it. Doing
it. Yeah. Some people like mowing their lawn. Probably shouldn't get a landscaper.
Yeah,
I like doing the pool.
Yeah, I'm not crazy about mowing the lawn, but the pool, it's quiet.
Mm-hmm.
I usually just get to get out there and kind of throw on some swim trunks and putter around. I kind of like doing the pool chemicals and keeping track of them because it feels like a little bit like a chemistry project.
Okay.
It's just nerdy enough, but it's also really episodic. It's like when it's done, I kind of go, all right, we're good, and I can put it away, and it's fine. And it doesn't ask me for anything else. The lawn, I cut it, and a week later, it's like, what are we doing here? And I'm like, oh, we're doing this again? So,
marching orders.
I feel like the pool doesn't boss me around as much as the lawn does.
I like your logic here, but it makes sense to me. That makes sense.
Anyway, well, look, Matt, you had a really fun idea about mm-hmm. what to talk about today on the show.
Yeah.
Share it with our audience here. I know I've been talking a bunch, but I really want you to share some things that were on your mind.
Yeah. So I started thinking about, and this is really pertinent, I think, to the fact that, you know, inflation's hot and we're money is on the forefront of everyone's mind, especially saving money.
Right.
But the question is, at what point is there a diminishing marginal return for your efforts?
Okay. I'm going to just pause for a minute. Let's say that in like just plain street English for our listeners.
Let's put it like this. At what point is penny pitching not worth your time?
Yeah. Like the diminishing marginal return is a, let's say a business term or a math term.
Yeah.
Matt's a math guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Here's another one. If you like, here, want me to use a math phrase for you?
Oh, I do actually.
It's asymptotal in nature.
Ooh, that was a good one, David.
Right? And you go like, did you just use an asymptote reference on the radio? You could say and that, by the way. Asymptote's a real word.
Yeah, look it up. See me after class if you don't know what it is.
Right? But that's the issue, right? If you remember, tell me what an asymptote is. That's fun.
I'm not going to go full nerd on radio.
I'll tell
them,
right? Remember your graphics calculator?
Don't do it. We're getting in the
weeds. And you had like a line, and you'd have a curve that would get closer to the line, but it could never touch it. That's what the asymptote is, the line that never gets touched.
You know, it's surprising to me because a lot of people can't ever get behind the theory that it keeps getting closer, but it never touches.
Yeah. That's the concept of infinity doesn't actually work in anyone's mind. Like,
right.
Everybody's mind breaks at infinity. We just have learned to tolerate it.
And I always kind of described it for people as, like, you keep taking half a step closer to the line, right? Like, I'm going to get halfway closer to that line.
Yeah, but it's not all the way.
You're never fully there, are you?
Yeah.
No, you're always just halfway closer. Yeah.
That always threw me with, like, a basketball. It's like, well, so it's half again and then half again and half again. And it's like, well, if you keep cutting it in half, well, at some point the basketball comes back.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so it bounced. It went the other direction. It had to hit something. And it's like, well, math doesn't like that idea.
No. It's true.
So it gets represented with symbols because, like, again, infinity breaks your brain. Right? I mean, like the idea, oh, the universe is infinitely big or infinitely small. What? I'm sorry. My brain's breaking again.
Yeah.
We just accept it. So you're like, my brain's not broken. I totally get it. It's like, you get it until you try to, like, put it into real life and you're like, when does it end? You know, it just keeps going. So
yeah.
it's like listening to a 2-year-old ask you why. It just keeps going.
And the question is, David, at what point do we need the penny pinching to not continue to infinity?
Well, at what point, here's a really easy way to put this, right? And we'll use this to set up our break. What point is the juice no longer worth the squeeze?
Ooh, I like it.
Right?
We're going to have fun with this one.
When is the juice not worth the squeeze? We will talk more about that, but we got to grab a break first. So stick around. We'll be right back in a second. This is Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Evidently, there's technical difficulties.
Someone probably hit a power line or something and knocked the transformer out.
And we're like, doggone it. We can't take you anywhere. So anyway, we'll see how it goes. Hopefully, everybody's here. I know it's on the live stream. So if you're listening online, you got it nailed. If you were listening on AM or FM, I don't know. But that's why we keep a podcast, because we're still recording this, so you won't miss it. But where do they find said podcast?
Go to our website at littlejohnfs.com and check it out.
Right. There's a Knowledge Center. If you look in the upper right-hand corner, go to the Knowledge Center, and you can find all kinds of shenanigans in there, including lots of the past shows. So, all right.
Yeah. We left people off talking about pinching pennies. Is it worth it?
Right.
When is there the diminishing marginal return that we talked about?
Yeah.
And I'm going to give an example of it.
Is the juice worth the squeeze?
So have you heard this theory? And I'm sure you have. People talking about, well, if you just wouldn't buy that $5 coffee on the way to work each morning and you were to invest that money, you'd be a millionaire. I'm sure you've heard it, right?
Sure.
It's all over the place. But you really got to stop. There's more to it than that, right?
Right.
Because
One of them sells mutual funds. The other is data.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just a bunch of numbers. But no, the thought here is, at what point is the juice not worth the squeeze, as you left the listeners off with, right?
Right.
And so you got to think about, well, the coffee maker, to get the latte machine that you need to make the same coffee, $600. The cost of the beans aren't cheap, right? What if you need coffee filters? The cost of the purified water, the cost of the cup, and your time and the cleanup. Is it really worth, you know?
And
what if that $5 coffee is your whole day, right? Like, what if that's your comfort zone?
Yeah. And the challenge here, right, if the $5 the question about the $5 coffee is, can you afford it?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I am going to
assume yes.
I'm going to just throw something out there. I caught when I was doing some research. I don't remember who said it. I really should find the name to give credit where it came from. But I think it's a generic enough quote that I can use this. And if I don't give credit, somebody's going to give credit to me. And I'll just be like, well, I didn't. I just borrowed it. Right. And it is the difference between folks that achieve wealth and those that don't. And it is that folks that are poor, that's what we're going to use in this case, poor people spend the money they have and invest what's left.
Mm-hmm.
Rich people invest the money they have and spend what's left.
Oh, I like that.
Okay. Now, that is subtle but significant because if you are not investing first and you're not thinking with the idea that
that's a really good caveat.
Yeah, is my use of the resource efficient and effective?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Am I getting the value out of that expenditure? Okay? Cuz that's really what you're doing. You're exchanging value. And so what you just did, Matt, I think this is really useful for our listeners to think about is, hey, we look at the value of that coffee relative to the cost,
mm-hmm.
right? And the question then is, okay, well, how do I determine the value?
Right, because there's a lot of different ways you can break that down.
Right, so you could rationalize or justify, right? That's the equivalent of saying, well, I want it, therefore let me create a reason to have it, right? We also call this confirmation bias,
mm-hmm.
okay? All the reasons that I'm right. Okay, I want you to think of it differently. It's like, is the cost worth it? This is such a simple phrase. Is the juice worth the squeeze? A great phrase.
Right, there's a lot of ways to measure that. Maybe you don't like the taste of the coffee you make at home, but you love the taste of the coffee you get when you're going to work.
And if that's the only thing you're doing, right? It's like, mm-hmm. this is my one indulgence. It's kind of my little vice, but it's what I do. And you go, well, yeah, you could just take that and invest it, and over time it does add up,
mm-hmm.
right? Are you that accountable with every area
right.
of your life?
Are you even going to invest the money, okay. or are you just going to go spend it on something else?
Because what we're really getting down to is discipline. Now, mm-hmm. I'm going to frame this up for just a second, because if you listen regularly, you're going to start hearing this on the show more frequently. And it is the idea of stewardship.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, for a lot of folks that come out of religious circles, that's going to be a dog whistle. And I'm okay with that, right? I'm not going to hide from my faith in talking about this, but that's not the point.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the point of why we're going to talk about this. It's a good way to frame stuff up, okay? So if you consider stewardship as this idea of how do you best utilize your resources? And it's all of the resources. The coffee isn't the problem. The problem is if it's the coffee and it's the I get a little bit extra here, mm-hmm. a little bit extra there. You know where you see this more than anything else in our culture? Calorie creep. Maybe not more than anything else, but you see it really obviously.
Yeah, because you're like,
I got this from your father, by the way.
Oh,
yeah.
We're
going to
bring
me,
Rod in on this
one. You got it. I got to get my best impression here because he's great. I remember one time he says, Mr. Little John, you know, I find it fascinating how in only... I'm trying to phrase this right, too.
Yeah,
he said, over any given year, you can add 1 pound of weight. And over the course of 20 years, you'll be 20 pounds overweight. 1 pound is 3,600 calories. Measured over 365 days, it's only 10 calories a day.
That is so spot on.
But he's so right, right? 10 calories per day out of a 2,000 calorie typical American diet. I mean, like, mm-hmm. yeah, right? The medical, that's not really an accurate number. Throw it out the window. But
sure.
The idea being, 2,000 calories, it's 10 calories is a fraction of a percent.
It's the creep.
It's the creep.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the issue with stewardship, is that it requires such diligence. And the coffee is it's like the gateway drug to more financial creep, and it gets you out of the savings mode.
I love it. We're going to totally title the radio show The Financial Creep. Everyone's going to be like, what are they talking
about?
Well, it's
the creep, and we do this in the simple ways. Like, we start to say, well, what are wants versus needs? And mm-hmm. like, all of a sudden, the wants look a lot like needs because mm-hmm. you want them, and you want to rationalize it, so you start turning into this.
And then you're swimming in the financial deep end of the pool.
Right, and then here's the part that really slays me, okay? You go online, you can look at, there's just tons of people out there talking about how to get wealthy really quickly. And while it is possible, okay, if you look at the bell curve distribution of people that are successful at doing this, they're trying to make it sound like everybody's going to fall in this really tail end of the curve. Like, that's normal. You could do this. All you have to do is blah, 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 blah. And like, there's just not real estate deals everywhere growing on trees that are interest and, you know, like,
yeah,
no money down deals that you can get the owner to finance and it's all going to work. Like, they're just not growing on trees.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Are they out there? Sure. But you're in a competitive landscape. And the goofy thing is that once you have some money, deals find you. Because there's always people trying to get money. So what do? They look for the places that have it and try to incentivize the deal. So, but there's this, well, how do you get there in between? I go, the thing about investing is it still works. You sit there and say, oh, you know, it takes a long time or this, but it's all about this creep thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your investments creep up too if you have good behavior.
Right.
That's the magic, is that it doesn't take rocket science. It takes patience and consistency.
Well, and
like
the other
make a diamond, you know, time and pressure.
Yeah, and it doesn't take a ton of money to start with either.
No.
That's the biggest misconception.
No.
Well, I'll invest when I have the money to do it. And I'm like,
what did I say earlier, right?
Yeah.
You can invest what's left or you can spend what's left.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So wealthy people invest and spend what's left. Poor people spend and invest what's left. And lo and behold, there's never anything left.
Mm-hmm. That's perfect.
Right? And so if you do that, and one of your purchases is the $5 or now probably $9 coffee,
mm-hmm.
then that's the issue. And here's my rule of thumb, right? Silly rule of thumb, but like if it takes more than an hour at minimum wage to pay for the thing, there's a good chance that it's optional.
Hmm.
Right.
Go more into detail with that. I think I like where you're going with this.
So, like,
give us an example.
You can probably substitute, right?
Mm-hmm.
Here's, I have no, there's no research or anything. This is literally me pulling it out of a hat.
Is this Dave logic?
It's Dave logic.
Oh, I like Dave logic. This is good.
What I have observed, this is my value menu theory, right?
Okay.
And this is also how I determine whether or not fast food restaurants are out over their skis, right? Are they too far out there or not,
mm-hmm.
price-wise? Because everybody pushes the envelope to see what they can get away with, right? But every now and then a company goes too far, and then they have to adjust things.
I feel like this
like,
might
whoa.
Be a Taco Bell theory.
It is a Taco Bell theory. That's where it started. But I can also apply this to Subway, where,
oh, okay.
you know, like a foot-long Subway meal the other day was almost $15.
Right.
And I'm like,
I remember
that's
the days where it was like $5 or $6, and you're like, this is a value.
$5 foot-long song.
Yeah.
Come on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know there's inflation out there, but we haven't had 300% inflation. When did a footlong go from $5 to 15 or almost 15?
When
right?
Subway said that that's what we need to pay for it.
Right. Because
it's called
we
greed.
Didn't have 3x inflation over the last 15 years.
No.
We didn't. Okay. But if you look, and so my theory is look at what minimum wage is. Now, really crazy because like Oregon minimum wage versus federal minimum wage, radically different.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, and we're a lot higher than the federal.
We are.
Yeah.
So if you look at minimum wage right now in Oregon and somewhere, depending on where you're at, but let's just pick around $12.
Sure.
Okay? Depending on if you're in Portland or Portland Metro or whatever. But let's say it's around $12. If you're paying more than $12 for the Subway sandwich, if you're a minimum wage worker, it's like you can't afford to eat at Subway. Because if you work 8 hours in a day, it's like 15% of your day almost
for the sandwich itself. Right.
Like, well, where's the rest going to go? Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's just, that's so expensive relative to the earnings. And we are totally seeing that out there in the world right now. We are seeing that. It makes me gag a little bit when companies go out and say, well, we're delivering value. And so some exec at Subway will thump their chest and go, well, that sandwich is delivering $14 worth of value to the customer. I'm like, well, they're paying it because they did. So I guess you're right academically. But as a percentage of the available resource, if every company out there says, well, we all think we've delivered value and we're all going to take the customer's money and then the customer spends more than they have, it's still the customer's fault for making dumb decisions. I'm just saying it's getting really hard to figure out how to partition when everything in life gets so expensive that people like it's hard to reach a living wage because the cost of life has gone up so much.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's kind of in on it. So therein lies some of our problem, right?
Right.
We get into the, well, what are the ethics of capitalism? You know, is it maximum profit at all times? And I would suggest there's a difference between maximum profit to the point of pain for the customer versus adequate profits to the point of value to the customer.
That's a fine balancing act.
It is, because there's some real subjectivity to that statement,
mm-hmm.
right? I can't whip out my abacus and tell you what the number is. I could just tell you that gouging isn't okay. Profit's okay, gouging isn't.
Right.
Where's the line? Well, the market is supposed to figure that out, but it is hard, which is why we need really good true wealth skills. Okay, is the juice worth the squeeze? We will continue to discuss this, but we still have to take an obscene profit break. So we'll do that, and we'll be right back. Stick around. This is Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you're listening to True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. On News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Okay, technical difficulties aside, we are back.
Uh-huh.
We are back. It's just making it a little bit more manual, like somebody has to throw a paper airplane at us or something and say, like, start talking.
We don't have any background music. We can't hear when it's time to go live.
It's so funny when the things that affect the show. But anyway, we shall persevere because the show must go on.
There we go.
Matt.
Yes.
Diminishing marginal return show.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of other stuff on this show, too. Is the juice worth the squeeze? And you want to talk about investing and when. I mean, you borrow your words here, but correct me if I get it wrong, right? When does penny pinching hurt more than it helps when you're talking
That's
about investing?
That's a great way to say it, yeah.
And so I was thinking about an example because you asked me about this.
Yeah, you've been doing this for so many years, so I kind of wanted to pick your brain because, you know, you've seen this before.
Okay.
Give me an example of a time where maybe trying to cut costs ends up costing you.
All right. So there are some really literal ones in the investment world, right? But let's start with just frame up for our listeners so that everybody's on the same page with me about what I'm thinking about. One of them is buying an expensive car because it gets good mileage.
Mm. Oh, right? I've had friends with this theory.
Right? Oh, yeah. I spent a whole bunch of money on this car
to save on fuel.
But I get really good fuel economy now. And I look at this and go, well, how many miles do you drive in a year? And let's pick a big number, right? It's like, well, 20, I drive 25,000 miles or no, 40,000 miles, which that's a lot of miles, right? 40,000 miles. Okay. And what's your fuel savings? It's like, I cut my fuel bill in half. I go, well, what's your cost for 40,000 miles? And it's like, well, if I get 20 miles to the gallon and it's X, right? And it turns out that it's really not a savings.
No.
Right?
Because you spent
like, my
10,000.
Monthly payment's way more than what I was paying on gas.
Yeah. That 10,000 extra that you spent versus what you were currently paying. It's like, that's a lot of fuel. $10,000 is a lot of fuel.
It's a lot of fuel. And to the person just stomping about, well, you don't just buy it for that. It's good for the environment. I'm like,
oh.
Okay, look, all right, look, not burning fossil fuels. I'm not going to argue that, like, burning stuff and putting smoke and other byproducts of burning in the air. Yeah, okay. Like, I don't want to smell it either. Like, I get it. But if the solution is like, well, we all have to buy electric cars, I'm going to go, slow your roll here. You're going to have to show me how the total environmental impact of that car, not just your use, but the production and the disposal and the lifetime, how that all operates and everything else that goes with it. You got to look at the whole picture. I'm not convinced that it's healthier for the environment.
Yeah.
I'm convinced that
all the
people
lithium
will
and
tell
cobalt,
you it is.
All that lithium and cobalt that we're mining takes diesel fuel.
Let's just be real.
Electric
cars are fun to drive.
I think
they are screaming fast and the power is instantly available. And it's like there are really cool things about it and the engineering around it's really cool. I'm not dogging electric vehicles.
No, I love electric.
I'm just saying,
but
let's be careful about trying to like latch on to the whole environmental
cause. This whole
cause.
Radical
like, it's a really
movement.
Pure thing. Mm-hmm. When I'm like, there are like we're compartmentalizing some of this here, and I don't know that that's okay. Again, off the rails. So other times, penny pinching doesn't help with investing.
Right.
Funny, but kind of accurate example. Purchasing index funds that are in usually emerging markets.
Okay.
Now, I have to be careful the way I frame this up because some people might construe this as personalized advice. That's not what's going on here. But let me just talk about this scenario for a minute. Okay. In the United States, we use something called GAAP accounting, generally accepted accounting principles. GAAP. Okay.
All right.
Those principles do not necessarily hold across all of the countries in the world. Emerging markets, by definition, are a market that is now coming into its own from a much less industrialized perspective or a much less advanced perspective. So if you have a third world country that's starting to develop its own infrastructure and so forth, or you know, third world's probably wrong, but we could talk about, it used to be BRICS were really popular, like Brazil, Russia, India, China, so forth. Well, if you look at, let's look at India as a marketplace, okay? There are still some pretty rough areas in terms of like building code and so forth. Like there isn't really much, right? So there's still a lot of poverty, but then there's a lot of rapid advancement. So India as a country is starting to, from giant population, right, has surpassed China now, or at least allegedly has passed China in population. And their economy is really coming on strong and becoming a global force.
Okay.
If you want to invest in India, how do you know
what investments?
What kind
getting?
Of accounting is going on under the hood of that thing, and how to value the investments in India?
Right,
they're not necessarily using the same accounting practices as here in the United States, so it stands to reason that it may not function the same way from an analysis perspective. So, buying an index fund is the equivalent of saying, "Well, you know, somewhere we just picked this basket of securities and threw them all in there, and you get what you get."
Right.
Buying an actively managed fund that has analysts in the area that are looking at these companies in those economies and sort of translating the accounting and helping you better understand what's going on, there could be some real value in that. It may cost more to do that, meaning like the expenses associated with operating a fund that's got dedicated analysts in the region versus a index that does not. You can see a significantly higher cost to operate that fund. But you may also see things like lower volatility and higher returns, even though the cost is higher to operate.
Even though the fund itself costs more to purchase.
And so this is where the penny pincher would say, and not disrespecting Vanguard when I say this, Vanguard did a really good job of training people to look at expense ratios in funds and look for low cost funds. Because the correlation of performance long term has been pretty decent that expensive funds tend to not be the best performers.
Right.
That's been pretty accurate. But there are times when that's not as accurate. And active management in really niche markets can be one of those times, right? Where the markets, and if we're really getting in the weeds, they're less efficient markets. Less efficient markets have more opportunities to exploit. Exploit usually sounds bad, but as an investor, an exploit tends to be in your to your benefit, right? So the ability to benefit by exploiting the inefficiencies of that marketplace, the bigger and more accessible the market is, the more efficient it becomes, and the harder it is to exploit that. Okay? So penny pinching in those corners of the marketplace may not work well.
Right? I like that example.
So there's a very real life example to me about where you could be missing the trees, or you know, missing the forest for the trees because you're so busy looking at, you know, that specific issue, and you're not seeing the big picture.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, I've seen it, you know, in even real basic terms where an investor goes in and they look at fees, right? Like the advisor charges a fee. And then they look at what type of yield am I currently getting? Mm-hmm. And they say, well, I can do it myself. And to that, I might say, yeah, you probably can. And a lot of the times, sure.
Well, I can change my own oil too.
You're right.
And it may even be more. If you add up the products, it might be like, I can get the oil for cheaper and I can get all the other. But then by the time I start to look at how much time and everything else, you know, did I get it for cheaper?
Right.
Or did I mean, was it convenient? That's a huge one, right? Was it convenient? And did I actually change the oil? That's the biggest one, right? Did you really
Did you get to it on time, right?
Yeah.
Because if you delay your oil changes, you know, 1,000 miles each time around and the engine wears out sooner, did you save money?
Yeah.
And it goes for investments too, right? Like if you missed the opportunity because you weren't watching it closely enough, could that pay for the fees?
Yeah.
Right.
I think that there is a real, well, all right, let's bring this up. Let's talk about this. And I want to talk about the benefits of, and the complexities of what happens with a complex life. But complex life, like we all kind of have a lot more complex lives than we used to.
It keeps getting more complex.
And so there are some benefits to that. And then there's some downsides to that. Want to unpack that, but we better grab our last break.
Okay.
So let's do that.
For it.
We'll come back on the flip side, and we're going to talk about how to get the best out of the complex life. That and more. This is Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM at 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show for the home stretch. Dave Littlejohn in studio with
Matt Dixon.
And we have been talking about all kinds of stuff today around really the idea of diminishing marginal return.
Mm-hmm.
Is the juice worth the squeeze?
I like it.
Right. Is it appropriate to pinch pennies? In what areas of your life should you, and what areas shouldn't you? And I want to wrap this up in the last segment talking about the complex life. Okay. It's just the nature of what's going on. We have more stuff now than at any other point in time. Right? It's like vehicles. It used to be that you would tune your own vehicles.
Yeah, the spark plug change took you 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Now
you don't really do that anymore.
Uh-uh.
A handful of people can because they really are kind of into that. But vehicles, one, they don't require tune-ups like they used to.
Correct.
Right?
I mean, you're not out there tuning the carburetor.
Yeah, it's mostly fluids and belts now.
Mm-hmm.
But so vehicles are way more complex, way more electronic, but at the same time, they have way longer service intervals than they used to. And yet we still don't necessarily service them on time. Lots of people are late on the oil change, or that, you know, I forgot to do the trade. And if you're not, you know, God love you, you're on it. But the issue is, are you on top of everything? Right? If you start to look at all of the things that you own, are you doing everything? So yes, I keep my check register is like tidy and up to the penny every time. And I have all of my maintenance schedules for all of the things that I own, and they're all working. And like I do the annual home maintenance, and I've got a schedule for when I get the house painted, and I make sure to fertilize the lawn on time. Like you just all the things. Can you do them all?
I have a dirty confession.
I'm listening.
I am super OCD with all of these things. And so, like, every year, the driveway has to be pressure washed by, like, this time. And it drives my wife nuts. And it drives me nuts, too. And it makes me hate all of the household chores because they all have to be done by a certain time.
So what? But here's the funny thing. You're actually kind of walking right into the point I'm making.
I know. And I'm setting you up for it, too.
Right? Because you're stuck with one of two options.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's say one of three options.
Well,
either go crazy.
Yep.
Lousy option.
Which is the current solution.
Two, simplify your life so that you don't take on more responsibilities and you can manage what you have.
Mm-hmm.
Or three, start outsourcing things.
Right. And that's the direction I'm headed.
Right. And that's what happens with most folks is that at some point we start to specialize and then we start to delegate responsibilities to other people. And we do that in the form of trades, right?
Yep.
I trade you money for your skill set to get something done for me.
I tried spraying my house for ants and spiders, right? Mm-hmm. Go spray the outside of your house, knock mm-hmm. the cobwebs down. The product I was using wasn't very effective, and it took me a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized for $30 or $40 a month, I can pay someone to do it, and there will never be bugs in my house. They come out every other month. They take care of it, and the problem is gone. Could I do it myself for $15? I could, but the product wouldn't work as well, and I don't want to do it. I don't like spiders.
Uh-huh. Now, could you get somebody else to wash your boat? So, yes, but
yes.
Do you want to?
No, because I love washing my boat.
Right. I vacuum the pool,
mm-hmm.
right?
Or right.
And if my wife's listening, you know, she's probably like, sometimes you vacuum the pool. A lot of the time, I vacuum the pool.
Oh,
that's probably true.
I'm not saying I'm the only one,
just so we're clear. I'm just saying I don't mind. It's therapeutic for me,
mm-hmm.
okay? But there's a bunch of stuff that we, you know, bring in ringers. And what that does, though, is enables me to have a life with my family mm-hmm. and also to really focus in on what we do at our firm. Right. So we're really much more hyper specialized in this investment arena. I mean, if you were listening early and you're like, I'd never thought about the fact that indexes in emerging markets might be less efficient than actively managed funds. That doesn't compute. Well, we think about that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Believe it or not, there are areas in the domestic market where that can still be the case.
Yeah.
Right. There are times when it is cheaper to hedge through a institutional basket than it is individually.
Because
the cost of hedging individually mm-hmm. can be higher than if you can buy it corporately,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's again, there's niche-y corners in the market, right?
Right.
That there are these exceptions. So that's just another one of those that we study all the time is how do you get the most efficiency out of what you're doing? And efficiency also includes your time.
Right.
Right? Is the juice worth the squeeze? Okay? And so what do we say to the DIY investor all the time, Matt?
Go ahead and do it. Just educate yourself. Be smart about it.
Yeah.
And if you're going to do it, make sure that you're doing it right. Like set some boundaries, set some rules for yourself when investing.
And here's the thing. This is not a dirty secret, okay? This is real. It doesn't take every single day all week long to do well with your investing.
Nope.
That's not the issue, right? The fact that we do it every day, we do it for lots of people. And so we have ongoing research and ongoing things that are part of that to include the time it takes to meet with and make sure we're aware of what our customers' needs are and we're staying on top of that. So, and we have a team where we can divide the labor up and we do different things, right?
Yeah.
Matt's working on one thing, I'm working on something else.
Mm-hmm.
That's the benefit of having a team is we can be more efficient by distributing the labor. Well, that's the issue with the DIY investors. You can do it. It's just adding to the complexity of life.
Yep.
And a complex life has one of three things that happens, right? You go crazy, you have to simplify, or you have to outsource. When you reach the threshold that you can't keep up, right? Or if you don't go crazy, then you do it badly.
David, what if someone is tired of doing it themselves? They don't want to do it themselves. And they're like, you know what? I do want to outsource this thing. What should they do?
Okay. So this falls under the category of find somebody that you like and trust. I know what Matt does, because Matt's great about this. He's really saying, how do they reach us?
That's what okay? I'm, yeah.
That's what you say. But I will tell you that it's not just about reach us. Find somebody that you like and trust. If you've got another advisor out there, we're not trying to say like they're not good and we are.
Right.
That's not the point.
Maybe your nephew's an advisor and you trust him.
What we're trying to say is work with somebody that you can engage with in a way that you're pleased and that you'll do it, and that they listen, and not just listen, but they're hearing you, and then they're able to interact with you so that you can get to where you're trying to be. And keep in mind, nobody can predict the future. Anybody that tells you that, I'd be very careful. But there are things that can be done to help mitigate risk and that can help frame things up so that it works better for you. But this isn't about producing miracles because they're professionals. It's about actually getting the job done.
Consistency is a big piece of this.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
So it's like the first thing about getting work done is showing up.
Mm-hmm.
And so that they need to be able to show up for you. So if we can be that person, awesome. So I know the music's playing, Matt. Tell them, how do they reach us?
Give us a call at 541-375-0898 or go to our website at littlejohnfs.com.
All right. Well, we are out of time for today, but thanks as always for tuning in. And again, if we can help you, give us a shout. Until next time, this has been David Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you've been listening to True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
The preceding program was paid for by Littlejohn Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brooks Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.